today on Ag News Daily.
But the reality is we have had too much moisture, too many cold days. You know, the wheat already looks exceptionally poor in our neck of the woods.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Pearson here. Today's sole host of the Ag News Daily podcast, Delaney, is down in Chile, Puerto, somewhere. I forget where she is exactly. But down there working with a bunch of exporters and foreign purchasers of United States soybeans, moderating a panel or doing some such thing. We're going to be excited to get her back next Monday. She did not miss much in terms of the markets today, or I should say she missed a lot. It just wasn't great news for American producers. We'll get to that a little bit later with our Market Monday segment. We'll be joined by our good friend, Angie Setzer, so stay tuned for that. But before we dive into that, I figured it's probably worthwhile to hit some of the news that is driving our industry. The ongoing story continues to be the trade war. China did announce that they are putting retaliatory tariffs on $60 billion worth of U.S. goods. Hit Wall Street, hit the commodity markets in the overnight. They did recover. Wall Street didn't, but the commodity markets did as we worked our way through the day. But basically, everybody is, or it seems as though the smart money is trying to bail out of riskier assets and put their money someplace safe. So they're looking at putting these tariffs on all sorts of different goods coming out of the United States. One of the big ones is liquefied natural gas. We're going to see them put tariffs on frozen vegetables and all sorts of different things. Let's see if I've got a better list here. I did. Let me make sure I can find it. So as of now, they've got a list of 51,040 U.S. products. And there is now an additional 25% tariff on 2,493 products, including, as I mentioned, LNG, soy oil is going to be targeted, peanut oil, petrochemicals, frozen minerals, I don't know what that is, frankly, and cosmetics. Most of the other products are going to see tariffs of 5 to 20%. Still in place are the 25% tariffs on soybeans, beef, pork, seafood, vegetables, whiskey, ethanol. Those were the ones imposed late last summer. And they did impose, or suspend rather, a 25% duty on auto imports during the trade negotiations. That was one of China's olive branches to try and keep things flowing, as well as their state purchases of soybeans. Remember, if the state buys it in China, it is exempt from tariffs. Now, if a private, you know, quote-unquote private party buys those beans from the U.S., then they are still subject to the 25% tariff. So basically, looking out ahead, there's really only about $10 billion more of U.S. imports that China can put tariffs on. But we could start to see them crack down again on regulatory approval. The Canadians are seeing the slow rolling of canola imports into the country. There's no tariff. There's no official, you know, headache for Canadian producers. But the Chinese are just not approving these shipments into the country just as fast. So once they're done, once all of the tariff jockeying is finished, just because China only has $10 billion worth of more products to tariff, don't think that they have to give up the fight. They can continue to fight in new and, I'm sure, interesting ways for those of us in agriculture. Now, there was some good news to come out of all of this. This escalation in the trade war seems to have taken these trade discussions up a notch. We did have Vice Premier Liu He in town meeting with USTR Robert Lighthizer. Now it sounds as though Chinese President Xi Jinping is going to sit down directly with Donald Trump and discuss. Trump said earlier, this is going to happen next month, he said earlier today that he expects their discussion to be very fruitful. And this is, I mean, maybe the step we need to make to kind of get this thing worked out. I don't know, but it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. Xi and Trump sitting down. We'll see what gets worked out. Basically, you know, President Trump does not want to see China walk back previously negotiated upon deals like they had tried here just 2 weeks ago. So we'll see what ends up happening. In the meantime, we are seeing farmers across the country continue to suffer. This second Monday in a row, we had a terrible overnight trade. I am currently sitting in a tractor. I'm doing some work with B&H Ag Services up here in Hudson, Iowa. And just I'm sitting in a tractor recording the podcast, looking out on the horizon. I see two planters running, and one drove by me here just about 20 minutes ago. We do have finally a little break in the weather in our personal part of the world. I know a lot of folks over the weekend got rain across Nebraska, western Iowa, parts of Illinois and Minnesota and Indiana. It is just a nightmare to get the crop in the ground. I don't yet have today's planting progress, but as soon as I do, if I'm not done recording, I will make sure that we get that sucker read to you. But it does sound as though the market is beginning to take notice. Now, let's see. Up until the market does take notice, and we put some prices, put some improvement back under these prices, the government is getting involved. Apparently, this kind of snuck under my radar, but the House Ag Subcommittee on General Farm Commodities and Risk Management held a hearing looking to examine the state of the farm economy and to highlight the challenges facing producers. So after the hearing, Subcommittee Ranking Member Glenn G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania and Mike Conaway from Texas made the following remarks. So this is their quotes after their hearing. They said, quote, "Today's testimony makes it clear that farmers and ranchers from all across the country have been struggling for nearly 6 years. While there are many factors outside of Congress's control affecting our farmers and ranchers, we have an opportunity to approve USMCA and pass meaningful relief to provide producers much-needed certainty. There were 369 members who voted in favor of the 2018 Farm Bill, but showing support for rural America isn't just something we do every 5 years. It should be at the forefront of policy debates." Now, in addition to making that comment, in addition to calling on Congress to pass the USMCA, they also reiterated a call to get a disaster relief bill through. And I had the chance over the weekend to take a little tour down Interstate 29 from Omaha down to about Tabor in southwest Iowa. And I tell you, the amount of acres still covered with water blew my mind. Some of the railroads down there are making some progress, getting tracks supported again that had washed out. The interstate was open. Most places, two lanes, but in some cases, still down to one lane. But those acres aren't getting planted. The number, sheer number of grain bins that had burst open absolutely blew my mind. Definitely shocking sights to see. Definitely folks that need to have some kind of a backstop. And since there is no coverage for stored grain, seems to be a place for Uncle Sam to step in. Interesting story here coming out of the EU. Bayer, after their purchase of Monsanto, they announced today that apparently Monsanto had been compiling files on influential people such as journalists in France and likely did the same across Europe. French prosecutors said on Friday, just a couple days ago, that they opened an inquiry after the newspaper Le Monde filed a complaint alleging that Monsanto had kept a file of 200 names, including journalists and lawmakers, in hopes of influencing positions on pesticides. So Sunday, Bayer said, yep, those files do exist. Don't believe any laws were broken, but they're going to have an external firm take a look at it. And I'm fascinated by this because I just kind of assumed that every company keeps a list of people whose positions they're going to try to renegotiate. I don't understand what's illegal about this thing, but apparently this is causing quite a stir in Europe, and maybe it's just going against the traditional French way of doing things. But basically, this is what the Matthias Berninger, who is a Bayer's head of public affairs. So he's kind of throwing Monsanto under the bus. He says, quote, "When you collect non-publicly available data about individuals, a Rubicon is clearly crossed, regardless of whether data privacy laws were actually violated." And then Bayer has issued an apology They did that over the weekend, and he repeated it. So we'll keep an eye on this. Don't know exactly what is going to come of it, if anything, but you can absolutely be sure that folks who don't care for modern agriculture, modern big businesses, they're going to seize on this. We're going to hear about evil Monsanto keeping files on all these people for years to come. So there's definitely going to be some repercussions. Another story we've got today that Angie will touch on just a little bit is Donald Trump said today that the administration was planning to provide about $15 billion in aid to U.S. farmers. Now, we don't know exactly what form of aid that is going to be. Will it be another MFP payment like we saw last year? Trump has said on Twitter over the weekend that perhaps USDA should just step in and outright buy soybeans and then ship them to poor countries. And not just soybeans, probably looking at a whole mess of agricultural products, but obviously soybeans are the ones that are kind of driving this here. Don't know. Don't know what this is going to look like. Apparently, Sonny Perdue said on Friday that Trump has asked him to create a plan to help farmers cope with the impact of the trade war. And, you know, we've got to think back to last year. That MFP payment was $6 billion of a $12 billion package. Now we're talking a $15 billion package. So theoretically, there could be some aid coming down the pipe for the American grower who is stuck bearing the brunt of this trade war. And President Trump says we are going to pay for this out of the tariffs that are collected on Chinese goods. So if any growers are listening, if you have bought a tractor or a grain bin in the last year, those are products whose prices have increased due to this trade war. Basically, Trump's going to give you a rebate on that because, remember, tariffs aren't paid by China. They're paid by us buying stuff from China. And we're going to get a chunk of that back, perhaps, as some form of aid package. That's all I've got for real news in the world of agriculture. Not a lot of upbeat stuff going on today, as I'm sure isn't shocking for a lot of us. But, as I mentioned, did have a turnaround in the markets. Angel give us the details, but before we do that, I will read the closing prices, and they are brought to us by our friends at the Zahner Group. Remember, you can get in touch with the folks at Zahner. You can get help managing your marketing risk by giving them a call at 312-277-0050 or visit them on the web at Zahner, Zahner.com, and tell them you heard it on Ag News Daily. July corn up 4¾ cents, closed at 356.5. December up 4.5 to finish at 376.5. In soybeans, well off the lows. The July contract was down 6¾ at 802 even. November, new crop down 5¾ at 827.5. And wheat was the big winner on the day. Chicago wheat, July contract up 12¼ cents, closed at 437 even. December, up 11½ to finish at 459¾. Jumping over to the world of livestock, it is red all down the screen today. In live cattle, the June was off $2.70 at $109.75. The August down $1.97.50 to finish at $106.92.5. Feeder cattle, May contract down $2.57.50 at $135.05. The August down $3.72.5 to finish at $143.10. And lean hogs, June, limit down $3, closed at $86.67.50. July, limit down, closed the day at $87.75. Jump over and see if dairy market was spared, and they were not. The May Class 3 milk contract dropped 3 cents on the day at $16.30, with the June off 15 at $16.16. Without further ado, let's kick it over to Angie Sessler. Well, folks, it is hashtag Market Monday on the podcast, and Market Monday it is indeed. Another Monday where we don't have a whole lot to shout with joy over, but I suppose we did close off the lows substantially. So joining us today is our good friend Angie Setzer, the Cash Grains Pro, the at Goddess of Grain on Twitter. Angie, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thanks for calling.
Well, let's jump right into it. We saw corn do quite a halfway decent move here as we moved into the afternoon. May was up 5 cents, D's up 4.5. I mean, what happened halfway through the day to really kind of light a fire under that market?
Well, you know, I'm honestly not 100% sure what actually took place to make the transition, other than the fact that maybe we're just finally recognizing what weather is doing. You know, we've had a lot of conversations about what's taking place across the countryside, and obviously now, you know, you're calling from a tractor here, and that's a big first-time move, it feels like, for you guys there in eastern Iowa in quite some time, and I think that's really something that, you know, we're looking at across the board there. Illinois at this point in time is looking at maybe, you know, a lot of farmers there are saying maybe 25% sort of progress on that side, and that's substantially lower than where we've been, you know, over the course of history here when it comes to planting progress and things of that nature. So we're waiting to get the crop progress report out here this afternoon in about another half hour, 40 minutes or so, and it really looks like we're going to be lagging. And obviously the USDA said on Friday that the yield numbers and harvest percentage and things of that nature that they were putting together was influenced strongly by having normal planting pace by the middle of May. And obviously, we're anything but normal this year, so it'll be interesting to see what that means as we move ahead.
So, given today's, I'm going to call it a rally. I'm in a nickel move in corn lately. We're going to call that a half-day rally. Yeah. Is there still going to be room to move if progress does come in slower than average, or is it going to have to be substantially delayed to see this thing carry through in the overnights and into tomorrow?
Well, I think, I don't know if it's necessarily as much focused on where we are this afternoon, per se, as what we're going to see happen in the next week and couple weeks ahead. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of conversation about it, where we are, and there will be, and there should be. But what does the National Weather Service say when it comes to the extended forecast? The numbers that we saw yesterday, or last night anyway, would indicate that we're going to stay below normal temperature-wise and above normal precipitation-wise throughout the bulk of the Corn Belt here, especially in those areas that have been dealing with these cold, wet conditions. Now, the 6 to 10 does show some warming trends here as of yesterday in the Eastern Belt, but you look a little bit further out, so we have a 3 to 4 week experimental forecast that they're putting out now, and it maintains that cold, wet bias basically through the first week of June. And so that's really something I think traders are beginning to pay attention to. And I think the other factor at play here is the idea that we really didn't get much in the way of progress done last week. And a lot of folks are basically, you know, in line to where we could get into the field about the time the next rain is forecast.
Yep.
Here. And so what do you start to do with that? You know, not only that, but I think a lot of the areas that are dealing that have been planted, you know, did it ahead of that pounding cold rain, and last year that was the worst thing for us here in the state was, you know, we did get a good amount of progress done, but then we saw that really heavy rain fall that was very, very cold, and basically the seed just sat there and had to be replanted. So that's a secondary question, and what does that look like, you know, when it comes to production potential as a whole?
So hopefully we didn't see a bunch of guys running out making some panic sales on Friday or this morning. How long should they be, what should be their target as you look ahead, given the uncertainty, particularly in the forecast?
It's such a hard day. It really just has to be something based on, you know, what each farmer himself is up against, him or herself, obviously. And, I mean, I know that's just kind of a phone-it-in sort of answer. I am anticipating that we should see some sort of weather scare come back in, and I'm talking to my customers about what they'll do if we get that 5 to 10% increase in value. So, you know, obviously that's somewhere between, you know, 15 to 30 cents of gain, and in my opinion, maybe a touch more than that, you know, to kind of come back into this market just from a weather premium sort of standpoint, and that put us back up into that, you know, 370 on the July, 390 on the Dece, and upwards of that 385 or so, maybe on the high end. You know, and I'm not one to sit here and price predict, but I think that, you know, right now the most important thing for a farmer is to take stock into what he or she is looking at, how much old crop supplies they have left, what kind of price target they're looking for, and then obviously looking at their new crop sales and making sure that they have target orders in place to cover themselves, you know, when this market does give us some opportunity, because it is very likely that it could be a very fleeting opportunity, and it's something that you're going to want to have, you know, prices in play for, targets in play for. The biggest thing that I'm looking at right now you know, overall is if you are optimistic, this market structure, and if you think the price is going to rally, and you're sitting in one of those areas that just has a boatload of corn sitting idle or beans sitting idle or something of that nature, I'm hearing a lot of stories about what basis opportunities are unfolding across the countryside. So be aware of, you know, what a basis contract could look like or what a sell and defense type of position could look like, and make sure that you're not waiting for that magical move that may not happen, only to figure out that everyone else has moved ahead of you and you're unable to grab that good basis you're seeing right now.
Absolutely. Don't be the last to the dance.
Yes.
Yes. Well, so on the corn side then, can we at least for the next, let's say, 4 weeks, say that perhaps trade shenanigans are out of the picture, we're squarely focused on weather and planting progress and emergence. Is that your thought?
Well, that's how it should be. I mean, reality is, how much corn has China actually
exactly
from us over the last 6 or 7 years? So, I mean, were we really factoring in that they were going to take the 3 million metric ton that they had committed to, for one, and refused to purchase, basically, or had slowly started to purchase? You know, were we thinking that it was going to be an ethanol boom on that part? I mean, what exactly was bullish in China trade talks when it came to corn as a whole anyway? I think corn's just been kind of a victim of hanging out with the wrong crowd, i.e. wheat and soybeans, and, you know, really has been pummeled when it comes to that side. I think it's been more headline risk. Now, obviously, we haven't seen anything supportive from supply and demand outlines, you know, that the USDA has given us, and we've seen substantial growth in production out of South America here this year versus last. So there's been a couple of whammies, but should China really influence the Chinese trade talks? Should they influence the direction of the corn market? In my opinion, you know, almost absolutely not. I mean, we found 6 billion bushel of additional corn there November 1st.
One
of us think that they were going to come in and be our savior, whatever it was, you know, makes little sense to me. So I think we really need to be focusing on, you know, what the supply and demand structure looks like for new crop. We got the USDA's initial number. Like I said, that was based on normal planting progress by the middle of May. Here we are at the middle of May, and we're far from normal when it comes to progress there. So I think we have to start taking into consideration what, a late planted crop looks like from a yield drag standpoint, and what are we actually looking at when it comes to overall acreage. Remember, the biggest increase in acres, you know, year to year per state was in North Dakota, and their late planting date starts on the 21st of May.
Oh, man, so, yes, we are getting really close.
we are beyond Mother's Day. So I had said a month ago, if we're still cold and wet on May 10th, the market should be paying attention. And I was obviously a little off on my date, because I think now we're finally getting to where it's like, oh, I guess we should be paying attention. So, I think it's important to watch, and I think traders, you know, should be starting to recognize, you know, what exactly we're looking at when it comes to this, you know, being stuck in this cold, sort of wet type pattern that we've been seeing for quite some time now, it feels like.
Well, let's talk about the soybean market. Angie, second week in a row, second ugly Monday for soybeans, but again, a pretty phenomenal rally off the lows here late in the day. We were, 17 down in the overnights, and now we only closed November, 5.75 down. So really, really a pretty good bounce.
Yeah, I would say that's a good bounce. You know, it's a solid number for the girls I hang out with. So, I mean, the reality is, though, you can't be bullish corn on planting delays and bullish soybeans for the same reason, just because that doesn't really work, obviously. But the fact is, no one's really certain what this $15 billion in aid is going to look like. President Trump continues to reiterate purchasing supplies and donating them to poor countries. Is there a program, a set-aside style type program introduced from a short-term standpoint? You know, obviously, none of this stuff I am saying, you know, I'm not advocating for any of it, in the words of a friend of mine. This is not something I'm advocating for, but it's something that could show up. So I think that's one of the unknowns that we have now that's starting to creep back into this marketplace. You know, what exactly does this price support a secondary line of MFP, what are we looking at with that? So I think that may help a little bit, just with the unknown or the uncertainty as to what that could, you know, turn into as we move ahead. But, you know, I don't think anyone can really look at the S&P table on soybeans and say that there's any reason we should be trading higher other than the fact that we've been trading lower for so long. I mean, look at what we've lost basically in the last month. On November, soybeans were down to 827, you know, and it seems like only yesterday we were 965 futures with the, you know, with the market staying relatively supported. So, you know, we've lost a lot really quickly, so I could see where that would kind of turn into some support and maybe some more sideways trade, you know, as we try to kind of wrap our minds around what MSP part due, you know, plus the production season is going to look like.
Well, let's talk about our options here. I mean, given this rapid drop, given the fact that I'm in the camp that feels like we got to have something turn around at some point, even just the dead cat bounce, something's got to change here and pop these beans up just, geez, even a little bit, get us back towards 850 on that November. What are your thoughts on getting, buying some calls down in here?
I have such a hard time. I mean, I'm if you're already sitting long, you don't need to have ownership, in my opinion, on a call side of things. I mean, you know, soybeans right now are six in one hand, half dozen in the other when it comes down to it. I mean, I had said at 935 futures, it was like picking which cousin you wanted to date. Now it's really we're a buck lower. Now where are we? You know, and so,
hey, you've gone beyond dating that cousin, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. But now we're marrying him and having a stick for a family tree here. So, I mean, it's just a hard, when you're already struggling with maintaining the cost of production, how do you accurately rationalize going out and spending, you know, 15, 20 cents, and what are you looking at when it comes to the return on your investment from an option standpoint with the way volatility's been and things like that. Now, I'm not saying it's not something you don't look at from a sell and defend sort of standpoint, but, you know, we're at 827 futures right now. You're talking about an 850 high side. You know, what does that turn into from a call? Do you spend 15, 20 cents and find a nickel?
Right.
You know, and so in these types of really tight margin situations, obviously it's important to pay attention to, you know, really your structure as a whole, you know, what you're up against, what you're looking for. You know, talk to your grain buyer. I mean, there's some guaranteed accumulator structures out there that, and I'm not pushing anything by any means, it's all about personal preference, but, you know, where you can gain an extra 25 cents or so, but still have this floor in place. I mean, obviously your upside's limited much beyond that, so you have to make that type of decision, but you also know that your downside is capped. You're done. So if you're extremely bearish, you know, it's a good way to maintain a floor and get a little premium too. But if you're bullish the market and you're already long the beans and you've already rode, you know, this far, what are you, you know, what's going to make you make a decision today, I guess, it's a hard place to be in. It's exceptionally hard from a farmer standpoint, obviously, and it's very hard from an advisor or a buyer standpoint, in my opinion, just simply because the last thing I want to see is anyone lose any more money, but the very, very last thing I want to see is you already have lost this much money and then you're just going to spend, you know, throw some more into the wishing well, hoping something happens, and so it's just something, you know, very delicate line to kind of walk on, you know, here as we just got to see what this MSP part looks like and all that good stuff and go from there, I guess.
Oh, geez. Now, we did see a big upside move in Chicago wheat. I've not been paying attention. What happened?
I think that it has a lot to do with weather there, too, in my opinion. Now, you know, maybe I missed something myself. I was sitting in a farmer meeting going over the very same thing that you and I just talked about on how the heck do I put lipstick on this soybean pig.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, we're kind of going over that, and I missed where the turnaround came into play. But I'm going to tell you this much, just I'm going to preach on some backyarditis here, but the reality is we have had too much moisture, too many cold days. You know, the wheat already looks exceptionally poor in our neck of the woods. If you look at, everyone's talking about how great winter wheat conditions look versus a year ago. That's all the southern plains, baby. That's your hard red wheat areas that are really seeing that improvement, not so much the soft red wheat. And so, you know, in our neck of the woods right now, we would have a heck of a lot more tore up if we could actually get into the field. So there may be some folks that are committed to a crop that's less than stellar. They didn't fertilize it when they had the opportunity. because they were planning on tearing it up, this, that, and the other thing. And, I mean, I really think production as a whole, if someone had asked, we'd had a conversation on Twitter here a week or so ago about what we thought would take place in the soft red winter wheat complex. And it's not the yield that concerns me. Obviously, we're getting decent rain and things of that nature and should have a relatively nice potential when it comes to bushel per acre, you know, for what we've got, relatively speaking. It's the harvested acres. I mean, you're looking at a significant decrease in Ontario. That's already been heavily discussed. They were already down from a planting perspective and are looking at tearing up a good portion of what they have due to poor conditions and prices. Very much the same, I think, in this neck of the woods. I know in Michigan, at least, you know, the bulk of my customers right now, those who got stuff planted are questioning, you know, like I said, do they tear it up? I got a lot of guys that already have or got out at least to get it rounded up. Is it rounded up or round up?
Yeah, you're round up.
It's
sprayed.
Round up. Yeah, she ain't alive no more. And so, but they can't get into to disc it down or do anything like that just yet. So they've made the decision, and now they're wondering if it was the right one. And the other areas that we have are not the greatest. So I am expecting at this point my elevator handling to be cut in half versus a year ago, and that could be a rosy forecast for me. So I am speaking very much in a backyarditis type way, but most everyone that I'm talking to, you know, especially wheat millers, are super happy that they're carrying in a good amount of this past year's crop, simply because they're not expecting a good amount of new crop to come into play, and I think that's kind of common across much of the Chicago wheat area and should have an influence.
All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Angie Setzer, before we let you go, where can folks see you next? How can they get in touch with you? What's the best way to reach out and get your thoughts on all things market?
Yeah, you can email me at asetzer@citizenselevator.com, or you can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Goddess of Grain.
Fantastic, folks. Look up Angie if you don't already follow her. There's a font of wisdom every day on her Twitter stream. Angie Setzer, thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
All right. Well, thank you very much to Angie Setzer. Always appreciate getting the Goddess of Grains opinions and thoughts and focuses on the market. If you want to follow up with her, as she mentioned, find her on Twitter at Goddess of Grain. While you're there, look up Ag News Daily. Just search for Ag News Daily. We'll appear both on Facebook and on Twitter. Delaney, I hope, is going to be posting some cool stuff coming out of Chile. And I will continue, you know, just blabbing about whatever it is that crosses my mind. That's the beautiful thing about Twitter. In the meantime, folks, you can always listen to our podcast on our website. Just go to agnewsdaily.com. We'll take you to our new home at the Global Ag Network. You can listen to us. You can listen to Angie Setzer's other podcast, Girls Talk Ag. Excuse me, Angie. And all kinds of other fantastic content. So be sure to check that out. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get back into the field here. I'm going to let you all get back to work, and I'm going to wish you all a wonderful day.